after the exciting service, I needed more excitement, so I read about them. And yeah, and actually, people who study the Masorah say that if you read a Ben Naphtali text, unless you study it awfully close, you will not recognize it as a Ben Naphtali text. It will look like Ben Asher, which is the one. The most accepted ones are the Ben Asher text, which is what Leningrad Codex is. So that's for your edification, guys. Yes, indeed, we are on Psalm 23. We are in our third week of our psalm journey because of those nasty Acts first reading passages that they have put into the pericopal system. So we're going right to the good psalms. We did a lament last week. Psalm 23 is in the general classification of a hymn, specifically a hymn of trust. And of course, we know it's a beautiful psalm, and you will probably have many occasions, especially at funerals, to preach on this text. We're very familiar with it in English, and I think Hebrew, going through it, will give us some additional insights. So let's just begin with verse 1. Mizmor LeDavid, again a psalm, and the Lamed probably indicates authorship, and I think last week we had a psalm that was also with the same LeDavid, so a psalm of David. Yahweh Ro'i Lo Echsar. Yahweh is my shepherd. Now, one of the things that I guess I wanted to focus on in this psalm is what should the force of the imperfects be? Normally we translate, the Lord is my shepherd, I will not lack, or I will not want. Which kind of gives a connotation, not necessarily, but gives a nuance that he's talking about something that may happen in the future. But I think that if you translate all of the imperfects in Psalm 23, present tense, when you have an imperfect and the context is present tense, then the aspectual perspective becomes stronger, either durative or repetitive or repeated action. So that if you translate this, Yahweh is my shepherd, I am lacking nothing. It gives a little more zing or strength to what the prophet is, to what the psalmist is saying. And I think we should be reminded, you know, we kind of forget this with Psalm 23 because it's so familiar to us, that this is not just being spoken by in a nice, romantic, pastoral setting. But probably we should think of the psalmist as being in some kind of trouble and undergoing hardship and difficulty. And so that when he says this, Yahweh is my shepherd, I am lacking nothing, he's making a significant statement, saying that right now, to all eyes, it looks like I'm lacking an awful lot, you see, because of the difficulty that I'm undergoing. Nevertheless, Yahweh is my shepherd, and so when it comes right down to it, I am lacking nothing. Okay, then we continue with verse 2. Bin ot deshe yarbitzeni. Almei menuchot yenahaleni. Binot, in pastures of desha, literally in pastures of grass. Okay, or grassy pastures. So not rocky ones. If you go south, west of St. Louis, you find all these rocky pastures, but nice grassy ones. Yarbitzeni, that is a hifil imperfect from ravatz, to lie down. Okay, intransitive in the call, here it's hifil, he causes me to lie down in pastures of grass. Almei menuchot, by, now literally it's by waters of resting places. Menucha means resting place. The plural is often used in Hebrew poetry to intensify, to give a little more emphasis. So, really quiet waters, you know. Quiet waters is how we would translate it, but the image that the psalmist wants to evoke is perhaps, you know, a pool that's very still. Interesting use of that word. You might want to look up Numbers chapter 10. And perhaps the psalmist wanted the people to think of this image as well. Moses says there in Numbers 10 that when, you know, the Israel would encamp in a certain place, when they were ready to leave, he said that the ark would go ahead 3 days' journey. Derech Shloshim Yomim, a journey of 3 days in order to find a menucha, a resting place, so that he would go ahead, or the ark would, and find the next place where Israel was to encamp. And then Moses said when that place was found, Moses then would sing this song, and it's right at the end of the chapter. When the ark left, Moses would say something, and when it came back to its resting place again, Moses would say something else. And so I'm wondering if Israel had that image in its head of the ark leading the people to a place of rest, and so that the psalmist perhaps uses that word, you know, to conjure up that picture of the flock coming to the place of rest, much like God's people who are called a flock, Yahweh leads them. And notice in this first part of the psalm, Yahweh is pictured as a shepherd leading his people. All right? And I think, you know, for homiletic purposes, it's instructive to think about the idea that in the Psalms, Yahweh is pictured in many ways. He's pictured as a king, he's pictured as a deliverer, he's pictured as a rock, he's pictured as a fortress, he's pictured as a shepherd. And each one of those pictures has a little different connotation to convey. So a shepherd, you see, brings with it many ideas of guiding, of protection, care and nurture, and that's what the psalmist is bringing to the people here. So he, to quiet waters, he yenahaleini, he leads me. Piel from nahal, all right, plus a suffix, first common singular suffix. He leads me. And notice, I think that in those imperfects, we're talking about the force of the imperfects, stress the repeated action, you know, either imperfect is durative or repeated, so that he constantly makes me lie down in green pastures. He constantly leads me to quiet waters. Okay, verse 3 then. Nafshi yeshovev, nafshi yeshovev yancheni beh maglei tzedek. Nafshi, my life yeshovev. That's from the root shuv. Polel, imperfect, okay? So he restores nafshi, my life. And really, nefesh is used in a lot of contexts to mean life. It's used in other contexts to mean soul. And so here I think you have both meanings that are implied here. On one level, he's the one who rescues the sheep from danger. On another level, he restores spiritual life to the soul that's languishing. All right? So, nafshi yeshovev yancheni. That is from the root nacha. Okay? Nacha. Again, a hifil, imperfect. So, he leads me on maglei tzedek, paths of righteousness. On one level, it simply means he leads me the right way, just like sheep go the right way. But with that word tzedek, of course, we think in spiritual terms, of justification and what Christ as the Good Shepherd does for us in leading us in paths of righteousness, namely in the gospel of forgiveness. Okay? Lema'an Shemo. So, Yancheni be maglei tzedek lema'an Shemo. So, he leads me in paths of righteousness for the sake of his name. Very instructive if you read in connection with that Lema'an Shemo, Ezekiel 36, 22 through 32, because there the prophet, or God tells the prophet, that he does not save his people, or he's not going to bring them back from exile because of them, but for his own namesake. And then he very beautifully describes the fact that we as God's people profane God's name all the time. And he is going to bring the people out of exile, save them, bring them salvation for the sake of his name, to bring glory to it, to sanctify it. And so there we have it here. It's not that the sheep are so deserving, but he does it for his own name's sake. Lema'an Shemo. Okay, verse 4. Gam kielek beged zalmavet lo ira ra. A gam ki, a concessive. Even though I am walking, okay, begeit zalmavet, in a valley of, literally, that zalmavet, notice it's a composite word, zal is shadow, mavet, death. All right, so death shadow. A valley of death shadow. Some scholars say that that mavet just is supposed to add emphasis to the tzal, but I don't think you can escape the fact that the reference to death here. So that again, even though I am walking in a valley of the shadow of death, so that the experience of the sheep here is obviously a very frightening one, facing death itself. Now notice what he says. Lo ira ra, I will not fear evil. By the way, elek comes from halak, okay, call imperfect. Remember that halak imitates the first yud verbs, yeshev from yashav, so halak, elek. Then lo ira is from the pe yud or first yud, yare, I will fear no evil. Okay? Then the second half of that verse 4, Kiyata imadi, shivteka u mishanteka, hema yenachamuni. Kiyata imadi, because you are with me. Notice that the image has changed, that the shepherd is now not so much leading the flock, but escorting the flock. Okay, I think that that's an interesting change. You see, as the flock goes through the valley of death's shadow, not only does he lead, but he also is with the flock. You see, escorting them, going along with them. So that's why that imadi is interesting. You are with me, shivteka, your rod. That is explained as a short stick, a cudgel that's covered with iron that the shepherd wears in his belt. And he uses that rod to beat off the wild animals that may be getting to the flock of sheep. So that on the one hand, that rod is used for defense of the sheep. And the other one, the mishenet, is his staff, which of course he uses to nudge the sheep along, and also when a lamb is straying from the flock, to bring the flock back. So that for protection and security, you see, you have both the defense against the wild animals with the one figure, and with the other, the security of keeping the sheep with the flock and keeping them moving along. And so he uses that word at the end, yenachamuni, from, it's a PL imperfect from nacham, to comfort. Same one in Isaiah 40, nachmu, nachmu. You see, comfort. Okay, so that the rod and the staff comfort the flock. Verse 5 now, notice what the psalmist does. He totally leaves the image of the shepherd, and he goes to the image of a host. So the picture becomes a little more intimate here. And I think as Christians from the New Testament perspective, we can't help but thinking of the divine service, you see, in which God, we remember, is the host who serves his people. And that's the image that's brought in here and even explicitly mentioned in relation to the temple at the end of the psalm. So, ta'arok lefanai shulchan. You arrange before me a table, shulchan. Neged zor rai. Before my oppressors or enemies. That's from the root zarar. That's a participle. And zarar means to vex or to harass or to oppress. King James, of course, translates that as enemies. Now, one picture that springs to mind here is, two pictures. One of them is perhaps a victory feast in which the people are celebrating while the enemies have to look on and watch. Another picture that I think is interesting too is the picture of calm assurance that comes to God's people because Yahweh is serving them even while they're in the midst of their enemies. Sort of like Romans 8, you know, who's going to condemn me when God is the one who speaks for me? And you know, at the end, I'm convinced that neither death nor life nor angels nor persecution nor powers, all that will separate me from the love of God. So that here God's people have this calm assurance, even in the midst of the enemies, they can eat the tremendous banquet that Yahweh has set before them. So interesting, you know, pictures that come to mind there. Okay, second line of verse 5 then. Dishan to Bashem and Roshi. Dashan is, in the call, means to be fat. All right? In the PL then, remember when you have a stative verb, the PL is often factative, to make fat. So literally it's, you make my head fat with oil. Vivid picture there. You make my head fat with oil. Obviously, that means to anoint. You know, you pour oil. Oil is used on occasions of the anointing of kings, obviously. Very festive occasions, joyful occasions is when oil is used. And so the psalmist really uses hyperbole or strong language. You make it fat with oil. Okay, now, kosi revava. Kosi is my cup. Revaya is a noun which means saturation, from the root rava, resh vav hey, which means to saturate. This construction is very similar to something like Yahweh's judgments are truth, or all your ways are shalom, peace. Okay? When you have a quality, an abstract quality, we would translate it, all your ways are peaceful, or all your ways are true. So here, my cup is well filled. Something like that. My cup is saturation, literally. Okay? Now, verse 6, beautiful verse to close. Aktov v'chesed yirdefuni kol yemei chai. Surely tov, goodness and chesed. Notice the covenant language here. All right? His goodness and his loyalty. I like that translation, loyalty for chesed, because it really reminds us of the fact that Yahweh made a promise, and for the sake of that promise, he is loyal. He does not go back on his promise. So, and now look at the next verb. See, King James translates this as follow, which is too soft. Notice what it is. It's radaf. Radaf means to pursue. All right? So, surely goodness and chesed will pursue me, or are pursuing me. Let's keep it that way, that durative action. Are constantly pursuing me. Radaf is, see, interesting, because that's the word that enemies do. Enemies are those who pursue. But here's that great reversal. The enemies have to watch while we eat at God's table, and the enemies don't pursue us anymore, but God's chesed and tov pursue the psalmist all the days of his life. Okay? Then finally, the final verse, v'shavti bebeit Yahweh. Notice that first verb is from the root shuv. All right? That's a vav plus perfect, first common singular from shuv. Literally, that's to return. And I will return in the house of the Lord, which doesn't make a lot of sense. So if you notice the apparatus at the bottom, the Septuagint has to dwell, see? And I dwell. So that what they suggest, one suggestion is that you just repoint those consonants to an infinitive construct. Remember, the infinitive construct of Yashav is Shevet, so that if you repoint it to Shiv-ti, and my dwelling is in the house of the Lord, all right? Or I will dwell in the house of the Lord. And then, of course, the Syriac, they have the suggested emendation that perhaps a Yud fell out, which is easy enough to do when you have a Vav and a Yud, because they're very similar in hand-printed text. And I will dwell. So either way, that's where the translations get that, which makes more sense. I will dwell, bebeit Yahweh, in the house of the Lord. You see, notice how the psalmist directs his attention to the temple. That's where he finds God's grace and peace and mercy. And of course, we the Psalms are full of references to the psalmist looking and desiring the temple and God's grace that comes from the temple. One way to approach this, obviously there's many things you could do with this psalm, but Luther has just a very interesting way. You know, what do we do with all these metaphors? To ask yourself the question, okay, if we're the sheep, where's all these green pastures? Where's this still water? Where's the cup that overflows and the table and all of that? And Luther simply points people to say that here in this psalm, God describes his word in many different ways. So that his word is the green pastures, his word is the still waters, his word is the cup, and so on and so forth. So that Yahweh brings us to his word of grace and guides us and leads us through the valley of death by the same word, and through that word, which we find in word and sacrament gathered around, we know that we will live in God's house, church militant, church triumphant forever. So there's a lot of great themes, especially for funerals, that you can use with this psalm. All right. Thank you very much. Sayonara.